Chapter 29. Concerning the monks of Thebais Apollos, Dorothers, concerning Piamon, John, Mark, Macarius, Apollodorus, Moses, Paul, who was Infima, Paco, Stephen, and Pior. Apollos flourished about the same period in Thebais. He early devoted himself to a life of philosophy, and after having passed 40 years in the desert, he shut himself up, by the command of God, in a cave formed at the foot of a mountain, near a very populous district. By the multitude of his miracles, he soon became distinguished, and was the head of many monks, for he directed them profitably by his instructions. Timothy, who conducted the Church of Alexandria, has given us a history of his method of discipline and of what divine and marvelous deeds he was a worker. He also narrates the lives of other approved monks, many of whom I have mentioned. 1. In that time many good monks, to the number of about 2,000, preached philosophy in the neighborhood of Alexandria, some in a district called the Hermitage, and others more towards Mareotis and Libya. Dorotheus, a native of Thebes, was among the most celebrated of these monks. He spent the day in collecting stones upon the seashore, which he used in erecting cells to be given to those who were unable to build them. During the night, he employed himself in weaving baskets of palm leaves, and these he sold, to obtain the means of subsistence. He ate 6 ounces of bread with a few vegetables daily, and drank nothing but water. Having accustomed himself to this extreme abstinence from his youth, he continued to observe it in old age. He was never seen to recline on a mat or a bed, nor even to place his limbs in an easy attitude, or willingly to surrender himself to sleep. Sometimes, from natural lassitude, his eyes would involuntarily close when he was at his daily labor or his meals, and when nodding during his eating, the food would fall from his mouth. One day, being utterly overcome by drowsiness, he fell down on the mat. He was displeased at finding himself in this position, and said, in an undertone of voice, "If angels are persuaded to sleep, you will persuade also the zealous." Perhaps he might have said this to himself, or perhaps to the demon who had become an impediment to his zealous exercises. He was once asked by a person who came to him while he was exhausting himself, why he destroyed his body. "Because it destroys me," was his reply. Piamon and John presided over 2 celebrated Egyptian monasteries near Dyolcus. They were presbyters who discharged their priesthood very carefully and reverently. It is said that one day, when Piamon was officiating as priest, he beheld an angel standing near the holy table and writing down in a book the names of the monks who were present, while he erased the names of those who were absent. John had received from God such power over sufferings and diseases, that he healed the gouty and restored the paralytic. A very old man, named Benjamin, was practicing philosophy very brilliantly about this period, in the desert near Sitges. God had bestowed upon him the power of relieving the sick of every disease without medicine, by the touch only of his hand, or by means of a little oil consecrated by prayer. The story is, that he was attacked by a dropsy, and his body was swollen to such a size that it became necessary, in order to carry him from his cell, to enlarge the door. As his malady would not admit of his lying in a recumbent posture, he remained, during 8 months, seated on a very large skin, and continued to heal the sick, without regretting that his own recovery was not affected. He comforted those who came to visit him, and requested them to pray for his soul, adding that he cared little for his body, for it had been of no service to him when in health, and could not, now that it was diseased, be of any injury to him. About the same time the celebrated Mark, Macarius the Younger, Apollonius, and Moses, an Egyptian, dwelt at Sitges. It is said that Mark was, from his youth upwards, distinguished by extreme mildness and prudence. He committed the sacred scriptures to memory, and manifested such eminent piety that Macarius himself, the presbyter of Selii, too, declared that he had never given to him what priests present to the initiated at the holy table, but that an angel administered it to him whose hand up to the forearm he declares himself to have seen. Macarius had received from God the power of dispelling demons. A murder which he had unintentionally committed was the original cause of his embracing a life of philosophy. He was a shepherd, and led his flock to graze on the banks of Lake Mareotis, when in sport he slew one of his companions. Fearful of being delivered up to justice, he fled to the desert. Here he concealed himself during 3 years, and afterwards erected a small dwelling on the spot, in which he dwelt 25 years. He was accustomed to say that he owed much to the calamity that had befallen him in early life, and even called the unintentional murder he had committed a salutary deed, inasmuch as it had been the cause of his embracing philosophy and a blessed mode of life. Apollonius, after passing his life in the pursuits of commerce, retired in his old age to Cetis. On reflecting that he was too old to learn writing or any other art, he purchased with his own money a supply of every kind of drug, and of food suited for the sick, some of which he carried until the ninth hour to the door of every monastery, for the relief of those who were suffering from disease. Finding this practice advantageous to himself, he adopted this mode of life, and when he felt death approaching he delivered his drugs to one whom he exhorted to go and do as he had done. Moses was originally a slave, but was driven from his master's house on account of his immorality. He joined some robbers, and became leader of the band. After having perpetrated many evil deeds and dared some murders, by some sudden conversion he embraced the monastic life, and attained the highest point of philosophy. As the healthful and vigorous habit of body which had been induced by his former avocations acted as a stimulus to his imagination and excited a desire for pleasure, he resorted to every possible means of macerating his body. Thus, he subsisted on a little bread without cooked food, subjected himself to severe labor, and prayed 50 times daily. He prayed standing, without bending his knees or closing his eyes in sleep. He sometimes went during the night to the cells of the monks and secretly filled their pitchers with water, and this was very laborious, for he had sometimes to go 10, sometimes 20, and sometimes 30 and more stadia in quest of water. Notwithstanding all his efforts to macerate his body, it was long before he could subdue his natural vigor of constitution. It is reported that robbers once broke into the dwelling where he was practicing philosophy. He seized and bound them, threw the 4 men across his shoulders, and bore them to the church, that the monks who were there assembled might deal with them as they thought fit, for he did not consider himself authorized to punish anyone. For they say so sudden a conversion from vice to virtue was never before witnessed, nor such rapid attainments in monastical philosophy. Hence God rendered him an object of dread to the demons, and he was ordained presbyter over the monks at Cetis. After a life spent in this manner, he died at the age of 75, leaving behind him numerous eminent disciples: Paul, Pacon, Stephen, and Moses, of whom the two latter were Libyans, and Pior, who was an Egyptian, flourished during this reign. Paul dwelt at Phaerm, a mountain of Cetis, and presided over 500 ascetics. He did not labor with his hands, neither did he receive alms of anyone, except such food as was necessary for his subsistence. He did nothing but pray, and daily offered up to God 300 prayers. He placed 300 pebbles in his bosom, for fear of omitting any of these prayers, and, at the conclusion of each, he took away one of the pebbles. When there were no pebbles remaining, he knew that he had gone through the whole course of his prescribed prayers. Pacon also flourished during this period at Cetis. He followed this career from youth to extreme old age, without ever being found unmanly in self-control by the appetites of the body, the passions of the soul, or a demon, in short, in all those things which the philosopher should conquer. Stephen dwelt at Mareotis near Marmarica. During 60 years, through exactness, he attained the perfection of asceticism, became very noted as a monk, and was intimate with Antony the Great. He was very mild and prudent, and his usual style of conversation was sweet and profitable, and well calculated to comfort the souls of the afflicted, to transform them into good spirits, if even they had previously been depressed by griefs which seemed necessary. He behaved similarly about his own afflictions. He was troubled with a severe and incurable ulcer, and surgeons were employed to operate upon the diseased members. During the operation, Stephen employed himself in weaving palm leaves, and exhorted those who were around him not to concern themselves about his sufferings. He told them to have no other thought than that God does nothing but for our good, and that his affliction would tend to his real welfare, inasmuch as it would perhaps atone for his sins, it being better to be judged in this life than in the life to come. Moses was celebrated for his meekness, his love, and his power of healing of sufferings by prayer. Pio determined, from his youth, to devote himself to a life of philosophy, and, with this view, quitted his father's house after having made a vow that he would never again look upon any of his relations. After 50 years had expired, one of his sisters heard that he was still alive, and she was so transported with joy at this unexpected intelligence, that she could not rest till she had seen him. The bishop of the place where she resided was so affected by the groans and tears of the aged woman, that he wrote to the leaders of the monks in the desert of Cetes, desiring them to send Pior to him. The superiors accordingly directed him to repair to the city of his birth, and he could not say nay, for disobedience was regarded as unlawful by the monks of Egypt, and I think also by other monks. He went with another monk to the door of his father's house, and caused himself to be announced. When he heard the door being opened, he closed his eyes, and calling his sister by name, he said to her, "I am Pior, your brother, look at me as much as you please." His sister was delighted beyond measure at again beholding him, and returned thanks to God. He prayed at the door where he stood, and then returned to the place where he lived. There he dug a well, and found that the water was bitter, but he persevered in the use of it till his death. Then the height to which he had carried his self-denial was known, for after he died, several attempted to practice philosophy in the place where he had dwelt, but found it impossible to remain there. I am convinced that, had it not been for the principles of philosophy which he had espoused, he could easily have changed the water to a sweet taste by prayer, for he caused water to flow in a spot where none has existed previously. It is said that some monks, under the guidance of Moses, undertook to dig a well, but the expected vein did not appear, nor did any depth yield the water, and they were about to abandon the task, when, about midday, Pior joined them. He first embraced them, and then rebuked their want of faith and littleness of soul. He then descended into the pit they had excavated, and, after engaging in prayer, struck the ground thrice with a rod. A spring of water soon after rose to the surface, and filled the whole excavation. After prayer, Pior departed, and though the monks urged him to break his fast with them, he refused, alleging that he had not been sent to them for that purpose, but merely in order to perform the act he had effected. 1. Chapter 30. Monks of Cetes, Origen, Didymus, Cronion, Orsiseus, Butabatus, Argen, Serapion, Ammon, Eusebius, and Dioscorus, the brethren who are called Long, and Evagrius the philosopher. At this period, Origen, one of the disciples of Antony the Great, was still living at a great age, in the monasteries of Cetes. 2. Also, Didymus, and Cronion, who was about 110 years of age, Arsacius the Great, Butabatus, Argen, and Serapion, all of whom had been contemporary with Antony the Great. They had grown old in the exercise of philosophy, and were at this period presiding over the monasteries. There were some holy men among them who were young and middle-aged, but who were celebrated for their excellent and good qualities. Among these were Ammonius, Eusebius, and Dioscorus. They were brothers, but on account of their height of stature were called the Long Brothers. 3. It is said that Ammon attained the summit of philosophy, and consequently overcame the love of ease and pleasure. He was very studious, and had read the works of Origen, of Didymus, and of other ecclesiastical writers. From his youth to the day of his death he never tasted anything, with the exception of bread, that had been prepared by means of fire. He was once chosen to be ordained bishop, and after urging every argument that could be devised in rejection of the honor, but in vain, he cut off one of his ears, and said to those who had come for him, "Go away. Henceforward the priestly law forbids my ordination, for the person of a priest should be perfect." Those who had been sent for him accordingly departed, but, On ascertaining that the church does not observe the Jewish law in requiring a priest to be perfect in all his members, but merely requires him to be irreprehensible in point of morals, they returned to Ammon, and endeavored to take him by force. He protested to them that, if they attempted any violence against him, he would cut out his tongue, and, terrified at this menace, they immediately took their departure. Ammon was ever after surnamed Perots. Some time afterwards, during the ensuing reign, the wise Evagrius formed an intimacy with him. Evagrius, for, was a wise man, powerful in thought and in word, and skillful in discerning the arguments which led to virtue and to vice, and capable in urging others to imitate the one, and to eschew the other. His eloquence is fully attested by the works he has left behind him. 5. With respect to his moral character, it is said that he was totally free from all pride or superciliousness, so that he was not elated when just commendations were awarded him, nor displeased when unjust reproaches were brought against him. He was a citizen of Iberia, near the Euxine. He had philosophized and studied the sacred scriptures under Gregory, Bishop of Natsianzen, and had filled the office of archdeacon when Gregory administered the church in Constantinople. He was handsome in person, and careful in his mode of attire, and hence an acquaintanceship he had formed with a certain lady excited the jealousy of her husband, who plotted his death. While the plot was about being carried forward into deed, God sent him while sleeping a fearful and saving vision in a dream. It appeared to him that he had been arrested in the act of committing some crime, and that he was bound hand and foot in irons. As he was being led before the magistrates to receive the sentence of condemnation, a man who held in his hand the book of the Holy Gospels addressed him, and promised to deliver him from his bonds, and confirmed this with an oath, provided he would quit the city. Evagrius touched the book, and made oath that he would do so. Immediately his chains appeared to fall off, and he awoke. He was convinced by this divine dream, and fled the danger. He resolved upon devoting himself to a life of asceticism, and proceeded from Constantinople to Jerusalem. Sometime after he went to visit the philosophers of Cetes, and gladly determined to live there. Chapter 31. Concerning the monks of Nitria, and the monasteries called cells, about the one in Rhinocorura, about Melas, Dionysius, and Solon. They call this place Nitria. It is inhabited by a great number of persons devoted to a life of philosophy, and derives its name from its vicinity to a village in which nitre is gathered. It contains about 50 monasteries, built tolerably near to each other, some of which are inhabited by monks who live together in society, and others by monks who have adopted a solitary mode of existence. More in the interior of the desert, about 70 stadia from this locality, is another place called Celia, 1, throughout which numerous little dwellings are dispersed hither and thither, and hence its name, but at such a distance that those who dwell in them can neither see nor hear each other. They assemble together on the first and last days of each week, and if any monk happen to be absent, it is evident that he has been left behind involuntarily, having been hindered by suffering some disease. They do not all go immediately to see and nurse him, but each one in turn at different times, and bearing whatever each has suitable for disease. Except for such a cause, they seldom converse together, unless, indeed, there be one among them capable of communicating further knowledge concerning God and the salvation of the soul. Those who dwell in the cells are those who have attained the summit of philosophy, and who are therefore able to regulate their own conduct, to live alone, and are separated from the others for the sake of quietude. This is what I had briefly to state concerning Cetes and its philosophers. Someone would probably censure my writing as prolix, were I to enter into further details concerning their mode of life, for they have established individual courses of life, labors, customs, exercises, abstinence, and time, divided naturally according to the age of the individual. Rhinocorura was also celebrated at this period, an account of the holy men, not from abroad, but who are natives of the place. I have heard, too, that the most eminent philosophers among them were Melas, who then administered the church of the country, Dionysius, who presided over a monastery situated to the north of the city, and Solon, the brother and successor to the bishopric of Meles. It is said that when the decree for the ejection of all priests opposed to Arianism was issued, the officers appointed to apprehend Meles found him engaged as the lowest servant, in trimming the lights of the church, with a girdle soiled with oil on his cloak, and carrying the wicks. When they asked him for the bishop, he replied that he was within, and that he would conduct them to him. As they were fatigued with their journey, he led them to the episcopal dwelling, made them sit down at table, and gave them to eat of such things as he had. After the repast, he supplied them with water to wash their hands, for he served the guests, and then told them who he was. Amazed at his conduct, they confessed the mission on which they had arrived, but from respect to him, gave him full liberty to go wherever he would. He, however, replied that he would not shrink from the sufferings to which the other bishops who maintained the same sentiments as himself were exposed, and that he was willing to go into exile. Having philosophized from his youth, he had exercised himself in all the monastic virtues. Solon quitted the pursuits of commerce to embrace a monastic life, a measure which tended greatly to his welfare, for under the instruction of his brother and other ascetics, he progressed rapidly in piety towards God, and in goodness towards his neighbor. The church of Rhinocorura having been thus, from the beginning, under the guidance of such exemplary bishops, never afterwards swerved from their precepts, and produced good men. The clergy of this church dwell in one house, sit at the same table, and have everything in common. Chapter 32. Monks of Palestine, Hesychus, Epiphanius, who was afterwards in Cyprus, Ammonius, and Silvius. Many monastical institutions flourished in Palestine. 3. Many of those whom I enumerated under the reign of Constantius were still cultivating the science. They and their associates attained the summit of philosophical perfection, and added still greater reputation to their monasteries, and among them Hesychus, 4, a companion of Hilarion, and Epiphanius, afterwards bishop of Salamis in Cyprus, deserve to be particularly noticed. Hesychus devoted himself to a life of philosophy in the same locality where his master had formerly resided, and Epiphanius, 1, fixed his abode near the village of Bisorduk, which was his birthplace, in the government of Eleutheropolis, having been instructed from his youth by the most celebrated ascetics, and having on this account passed the most of his time in Egypt. Epiphanius became most celebrated in Egypt and Palestine by his attainments in monastic philosophy, and was chosen by the inhabitants of Cyprus to act as bishop of the metropolis of their island. Hence he is, I think, the most revered man under the whole heaven, so to speak, for he fulfilled his priesthood in the concourse of a large city and in a seaport, and when he threw himself into civil affairs, he conducted them with so much virtue that he became known in a little while to all citizens and every variety of foreigner, to some, because they had seen the man himself, and had experience of his manner of living, and to others, who had learned it from these spectators. Before he went to Cyprus, he resided for some time, during the present reign, in Palestine. At the same period in the monasteries, Salamines, Fuscan, Malachian, and Crispian, for brethren, were highly distinguished. They practiced philosophy near Bethelia, a village of Gaza. They were of a resident noble family, and had been instructed in philosophy by Hilarion. It is related that the brothers were once journeying homewards, when Malachian was suddenly snatched away and became invisible. Soon afterwards, however, he reappeared and continued the journey with his brothers. He did not long survive this occurrence, but died in the flower of his youth. He was not behind men of advanced age in the philosophy of virtuous life and of piety. Ammonius lived at a distance of 10 stadia from those last mentioned. He dwelt near Kafr Gobra, the place of his birth, a town of Gaza. He was very exact and courageous in carrying through asceticism. I think that Silvanus, a native of Palestine, to whom, on account of his high virtue, an angel was once seen to minister, practiced philosophy about the same time in Egypt. Then he lived at Mount Sinai, and afterwards founded at Gerari, in the Wadi, a very extensive and most noted cenobium for many good men, over which the excellent Zacharias subsequently presided. Chapter 33. Monks of Syria and Persia, Bathers, Eusebius, Barges, Halas, Abo, Lazarus, Abdullahs, Zeno, Heliodorus, Eusebius of Car, Protogenes, and Onis. Let us pass thence to Syria and Persia, too. The parts adjacent to Syria. We shall find that the monks of these countries emulated those of Egypt in the practice of philosophy. Bathias, Eusebius, Barges, Halas, Ababos, Lazarus, who attained the episcopal dignity, Abdullahs, Zeno, and Heliodorus, flourished in Nisibis, near the mountain called Sigaron, when they first entered upon the philosophic career. They were denominated shepherds, because they had no houses, ate neither bread nor meat, and drank no wine, but dwelt constantly on the mountains, and passed their time in praising God by prayers and hymns, according to the law of the church. At the usual hours of meals, they each took a sickle, and went to the mountain to cut some grass on the mountains, as though they were flocks in pasture, and this served for their repast. Such was their course of philosophy. Eusebius voluntarily shut himself up in a cell to philosophize, near Car. 3. Protogenes dwelt in the same locality, and ruled the church thereafter Vitus, who was then bishop. This is the celebrated Vitus of whom they say that when the emperor Constantine first saw him, he confessed that God had frequently shown this man in appearances to him and enjoined him to obey implicitly what he should say. Ones had a monastery in Fardana. This was the spot where Jacob, the grandson of Abraham, on his journey from Palestine, met the damsel whom he afterwards married, and where he rolled away the stone, that her flock might drink of the water of the well. It is said that Ones was the first who introduced the life apart from all men, and the severe philosophy into Syria, just as it was first introduced by Antony into Egypt.